I kind of see this as like, in hindsight, if you were just in the most kind of corrupt, colluding way possible, if you wanted to maintain this extreme asymmetry of wealth, like you would not make that aspect of society visible to people who are getting such low wages.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's a lot of people who work in like creative fields that they survive on like 30, 40K.
Yeah.
And then they are interfacing and like on a face-to-face level with billionaires in mm-hmm. some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And that like is not often allowed to happen, but it kind of happens a lot in art.
Yes.
And so that's a very funny point where like these things cross over. Okay, so post Sculpture Center,
mm-hmm.
Where do you go next?
I went to Columbia University.
Columbia University. Yeah. Okay, bring us through that. You are a member of the UAW Local 2110,
mm-hmm.
which was based in Columbia.
Yes. So after, you know, I wanted to work in the arts. As we've already said, it's incredibly challenging, you know, trying to get by on $40,000 a year in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted more time to make art. And kind of on a whim, I applied to work at Columbia. I had heard a tip that one of my favorite artists, Irina Knezhevich, was going to be teaching at, I think, Barnard or Columbia. I just heard a tip that this was going to happen. I was like, oh, cool.
Okay.
I like her.
Okay.
Maybe Columbia is hiring. And then by chance, the visual arts program was hiring.
Yeah, yeah.
And wound up there. Working actually with some people from Chicago. Carrie Gundersdorf, a really amazing painter, was my manager for a time. And it was Laura Mascara, also an amazing artist and painter. And the job was pretty basic. I was a program assistant in the department, so I greeted visitors and made schedules and did the kind of grind of keeping a graduate program running, but it was unionized.
Yeah.
And that was my first time being in a union. And it was just, it was transformative.
And you became at some point the shop steward for 2110.
Yeah, I was the unit chair.
Unit chair,
yeah.
Okay.
The steward of stewards. And I was on our bargaining committee. But I remember just going to my first union meeting and being in this room of like 200, 300 people who I had never seen before in my life, but we were all kind of arguing about the contract on the table, what we wanted out of it, what questions we had, what we're willing to do to win something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just profoundly democratic in a way that I'd never experienced before. And I was hooked. I thought it was so cool that people could do that together.
Okay. So this is maybe like the best possible origin story for me specifically. I'm like a targeted individual right now. To go from art to working in a university, you're in your organized union. How do you then decide to run for office?
That was a longer process, I
yeah.
think. So I was in my union for about 6 years total. But I think, so I got into my union. I thought it was really cool. Obviously getting off at 5 o'clock is like transformative if you have never had that experience before.
Yeah, yeah.
And it gave me opportunity and time to get more organized in other places. So I joined DSA, New York City, the Democratic Socialists of America, and got really involved there. And just started recognizing like how much power everyday working people can win when we organize together and how possible it is to do that organizing. I think certainly from the DSA perspective, the thing that really hooked me was the idea that we can build our own machines.
Do you mean?
That
political machines.
Political machines, yeah.
That, okay.
You know, I think politics was always this kind of rarefied thing that like consultants know how to do, or people who got political science degrees know how to do.
Consultants claim they know how to
exactly. And they continue to claim it.
Despite staggering results in the elections. But,
yeah.
Okay.
Neither here
nor there. Industry's thriving, I understand.
But it was like this thing that like, well, not available to me or to the people in my neighborhood. And I think being in DSA disproved that like people can come together because they want to win healthcare for everyone and can run campaigns and develop strategies, and anyone can participate in that. And I thought that was so cool. So I got really involved in DSA as well. And it was like part and parcel of being involved with my union, seeing that like, you know, someone with a high school degree could get a living wage and could go toe-to-toe with Columbia University and take on really powerful institutions, profoundly moving and just like really incredible. So I was asked to run for office a couple of times. The second time I said yes, finally. and I ran for Assembly in 2024 and won. But I remember the feeling I had when I first said, okay, I'm going to do this. Like, fine. I've been worn down. Feeling like powerful in a really specific way. Powerful insofar as like, oh, there's like, I'm not by myself. Yeah. You know, like I'm with like hundreds of other people right now in every moment. And that's what I wanted to bring to Albany as a New York State Assembly member too. New York's not the only city in the world.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't think we should, you know.
Well, it's the one that has the most proximity to capital that mm-hmm. art needs those patrons.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you go to Philly, there's just less rich people to buy it.
Art is also a public good, in my opinion. Mm. And like, we shouldn't be so reliant on like the patronage of the wealthy to make it sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
So like what the state's for.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Can we start with some art world stuff? Is that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so we've done... I'm like in proximity to it, but not a member anymore. So I'll try and like speak to it.
Did they cast you out? They revoked your card?
I cast myself out. You,
okay.
I bowed
you
out.
Left. You left. Yeah. 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 I mean, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. We've done how many? This is like 47, 48 episodes. Uh-huh. And we've had like two or three artists on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And don't plan to do any more anytime soon. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about your background in art school. You went to SAIC.
Mm-hmm,
yes,
I did.
That's where our tripod over there is from.
Nice.
Okay, so, and you studied sculpture, studio art?
I studied painting. I had like a funny degree. It was like a BFA with an emphasis in art history and criticism.
Mm-hmm.
So I did painting and some art history and fiber arts. I did weaving.
Mm-hmm,
A funny mix.
How much was theory and how much was studio?
It was probably 10% theory and 90% studio.
Oh,
yeah. I got the theory out of the way as soon as I could, and then spent the, and okay. was not good at that part either.
Yeah, all right.
So it was mostly in the studio. Yeah.
That's that sounds like a more enjoyable way to do it. What about the kind of theory that you absorbed in art school? Like, for my experience, my perspective, I had a, level of introduction to this stuff that set me on a certain course.
Mm.
And then in my adult life after graduation, I realized that a lot of the ideas that I was introduced to in the kind of art theory world were not like left or I don't know what they are. They're just kind of weird academy fluff.
Yeah.
Did you bring any of that stuff with you? Was it influential in any way?
I think it didn't penetrate to a level that it was something that I would carry with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I was really introduced to in like art school was the dynamic of being a worker. Mm-hmm. So I worked part-time at Trader Joe's and that kind of carried me through my time in art school. And so mostly I remember it being a balancing act between how do I get enough time in my studio and how do I get the hours in at Trader Joe's so I can maintain my health care and get some money in the door. And mostly that's what I remember. And it felt like the theory was not helpful in navigating those kind of like time constraints and material constraints of being a working artist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Trader Joe's, you'll know more about this than I do, but they're like viciously anti-union. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't really, I mean, I experienced that in some ways. Mm-hmm. We weren't trying to organize my shop at all, but when I was at Trader Joe's was when the company kicked all the part-time workers off of our healthcare.
And so I
got a COBRA letter in the mail one day, basically saying like—
And you were one of the part-time workers.
I was one of the part-time workers, and had been at Trader Joe's for about 4 years at that point too. So I got this kind of like very cruel exodus from our healthcare. And there are a ton of part-time workers at Trader Joe's too, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Mm-hmm. Is there a ratio? Is it like 50-50 full-time, part-time, or what's the?
Yeah, I'd probably suspect maybe even higher. I think it depends on the store, but at least the one I was at, there were some retirees who worked there who just wanted some extra, like income. There are a lot of artists and musicians who worked at Trader Joe's too.
Oh, interesting. What particular reason why that was?
Flexibility. And honestly, like the wages were not bad. I certainly got paid more there than at some other jobs.
Okay.
And it was flexible too. Like I worked in the mornings at the end of my time there. So I was there 5 a.m. to 1 p.m. and then I'd get out and could either go work another job or could go to my studio. I ran a gallery with a friend of mine, and we would go do that.
Okay. Yeah. tell me more about that.
We inherited a space in a studio building in Chicago that we ran as a little gallery.
Chicago has, for people who don't know this, like a thriving ecosystem of like scrappy DIY project spaces that are like really influential, and it's a way to kind of get your foot in the door for young emerging artists that doesn't exist in New York.
Yeah, totally.
What was your program for this space?
We really just showed our friends.
that's how people do it.
Yeah, totally.
I'm going to chase a rabbit hole for a little bit. We can put this behind the paywall if it's a little bit too niche. So when you were on the stream with Hassan, he showed you a video that was an early piece from Zohran was the speaker in the video. I think this was around 2018, 2019, talking about housing for all. Mm-hmm. That video happened to be produced by the Gravel Institute, which was, you know, we're going back a ways here, but that was like the big hope for the left doing messaging online. And fast forward about, you know, 6 years, the founders of the Gravel Institute now work for Marc Andreessen, venture capitalist, A16Z. This is someone that you would put on the New Right, who, you know, references the work of Curtis Yarvin and these type of characters. So that's a pretty big 180. Mm. They now run the media department for A16Z. And I'm curious if you have known people in your personal life that haven't just become kind of political nihilists, but have maybe even leaned in towards these right-wing ideas in the last few years. Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising. So your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.